This year, on the LRB's Close Readings podcast, Revolutionary Thinkers.
What Simone de Beauvoir is doing here is an historical reconstruction.
A history of satire.
Rochester's kind of satire can be as much a satire that eats itself as a satire that cuts someone's throat.
And a return to the ancients.
It's very tempting to think there's a sharp contrast between Hesiodic and Homeric narrative, but there isn't necessarily.
Plus, access to all our previous series. Search LRB Close Readings wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is presented by Bobbi Brown Cosmetics. Bobbi Brown Cosmetics is known for their complexion products, and their new weightless skin foundation is turning non-foundation wearers into foundation wearers.
The Bobbi Brown team tested on over 7,000 faces to perfect the formula and color range to deliver on what women seek out most in a foundation. The result? You see your best skin, not makeup.
With 24-hour moisture and 24-hour wear, the smart skin balancing technology adapts to what your skin needs. Bobbi Brown's ultra-lightweight formula feels like nothing on your skin. It even stays put while on the move, even in humid climates. See more of the campaign and discover your perfect shade of weightless skin foundation at BobbiBrown.com.
Shut down the border. Build the wall. Stop the immigrants, ban the imported fentanyl killing our kids, make America safe once again. The Republican mantras around illegal immigration and safety have long since taken on a dark Trumpian tone, from his earliest campaigns right up to the speech he was making last Saturday when he was shot at. Donald Trump has made a fetish of keeping foreigners out, linking them with killing and rape and voter fraud, and the drive with him is to put Americans first.
But what are the Republicans actually saying? And what are they not saying? As fire and brimstone once again take center stage, and delegates delight in a common, if largely imaginary, enemy, the invaders crossing the borders into America.
I'm Deborah Friedel, contributing editor to the London Review of Books.
And I'm Andrew O'Hagan, editor-at-large. It's day two of the Republican National Convention.
It's a few minutes before midnight in Milwaukee. One of the themes today was security. What was the security like for you getting into the convention?
You know, it's really striking the way the city is in a sort of lockdown for this convention. In that area, the dead center, where the convention center is and the press center, they call it the hard zone. And it is a strange mixture of being in a kind of Disneyland where, you know, these empty streets off to one side and you kind of expect a parade to come down at any moment and sort of people twirling batons and Minnie Mouse sort of with a Trump face on. And yet it's sort of sinister at the same time in a different way because, you know, it's so soldiered. It's so heavily armoured. These fences are high. The roadblocks are immovable. And you feel kettled while you're in there. You feel as if, you know, you can't get out very easily. So it's a bit claustrophobic.
It's funny. You thought of the security zones being reminded you of sort of Disneyland. For me, I kept thinking of zombie movies. I think it was 28 Days Later, where I think the survivors come around a very fortified military encampment with lots of checkpoints. I mean, I lost track of how many checkpoints we had to go through in order to get to the arena. And the various security zones with, you know, each with a slightly different regulations, you know, was explained to me by someone as sort of resembling an onion. So as you'd imagine, you know, the rules get stricter and stricter as you get closer and closer. The strictest rules are, you know, the ones closest to Donald Trump. Cars can only go so far, which I think we both found a little difficult and confusing when we were trying to leave.
So the city's taxi drivers finding it difficult. One of them said today that he felt that he'd lost the city for the whole week. The places they can normally go, they can't go near. Must be quite vexing.
Mm.
Especially if your sat nav doesn't recognize the RNC.
But there was, you know, one rule that actually really surprised me. You know, just outside the area that has the arena and I think just a couple other buildings, still within the security perimeter, but not the hardest bit. You know, the rule saying you can't have glass bottles, you can't have a tent. I think umbrellas with metal tips are banned. But you know what's not banned on that list are guns.
Huh.
And the reason for this is because Wisconsin is a state in which anyone over the age of 18 pretty much is allowed to have a gun. And Milwaukee, which is a progressive city, isn't allowed to impose gun control. And the fact that the RNC is here doesn't mean that, you know, they're allowed to impose gun control on the whole city.
Yeah, because the Constitution defends the right to carry a gun, but it doesn't defend the right to carry a metal-tipped umbrella.
Exactly.
Isn't that fascinating? So listen, given all this security talk, the day started before we even got near the convention centre and many, many speeches about homeland security and migrants and borders, and we'll get to that in a minute. Before that even came up, there was an incident to do with the perimeter fence today, wasn't there?
Yeah, so early this afternoon, before it really got going in the convention hall, a man was shot. And less than a mile from the arena is King Park. It's still sort of in the perimeter area. If we're thinking about our onion, you know, sort of softer security. It has a large homeless encampment. And a man who is often there was killed by police officers from Ohio, because so many police officers are required for this kind of convention. They've come from all over the country. I've met police officers from Virginia, from Kentucky. It was a group of police officers from Ohio, and they shot and killed a man in the park.
Was the man threatening?
So the details are still coming out. Local reporters from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel suggests that the man probably had a knife, possibly two knives. What we think happened is that he was probably having a fight with another man. The Ohio police officers say that he didn't obey commands. They were trying to save lives. And in the process, that the man was killed. There's been an outcry.
Quite rightly. I mean, this is ironic beyond, isn't it? That here we are, day two of the convention, where the big topic today is American safety, policing, borders. And here is a guy just beyond the perimeter fence who's shot dead.
Yeah. So local activists say this is exactly what they worried about when Milwaukee was first named as a convention city. Police coming, who don't know the neighborhoods, don't know the people. Since Saturday, possibly a little more trigger happy, a little more wary. A local alderman, that's an elected official, gave a statement saying that Milwaukee police well know King Park is an area where homeless people have an encampment. Many of them have untreated severe mental illnesses. And this alderman was confident that local police would have been able to tread carefully and de-escalate. He said the state cops don't know King Park from Central Park.
It strikes a chord, actually, that we're going to find reverberates right through today in the many speeches, right into late this evening that we listen to, essentially about law and order and borders and the obsession that the Trumpians have with these things. Let's step inside the building, because it was a day in which many speeches were made. We had a hell of a lot of shouting and bawling about illegals invading America. Putting American safety first was really the big theme of today, and obsessing about these people breaking through the border to rape, pillage, steal, commit voter fraud. To listen to those speakers today, anybody would imagine America is constantly under siege from, countless thousands, if not millions, pouring through the border from Mexico, but also coming in plane loads from what Trump famously once called shithole countries.
The great replacement theory seemed to be coming up either as an illusion or explicitly.
Oh, absolutely. Just full of a kind of venomous sense of an America under attack. It chimes with that original first-term inauguration speech of Trump's, you must remember it, where he talked about American carnage. He set a very dark tone. That's one of the things that's really striking about this convention. They're always talking about make America great again. At least 20, maybe 25 of the speakers so far over these last 2 days talk about America as being the greatest country that ever existed. Yet they don't make it sound like a great country. They make it sound dark, involuted, full of enemies, dark forces, threats. It's such a contradiction to keep talking about America as the greatest country ever invented. Anybody else would think, well, You haven't really persuaded us in an optimistic way of why it's so great. Make it great again? Well, at the moment it sounds dark and horrible, doesn't it?
Well, is the idea that halcyon days while Donald J. Trump was president, the minute he's
absolutely
out and Biden's in, it's, you know,
as if
all
Biden
goes to hell.
Created all the evils of the world. Yeah. Mike Rogers of Michigan shouted from the podium today that he didn't want America to be run by communist China.
I will never put our children's future in the hands of the Chinese Communist Party, and it's the Republicans that are going to stop them from doing that.
It was such a sort of wonderfully sort of unnecessary intervention. Suddenly, a lot of people talking about fentanyl and drug abuse being, you know, very much an imported phenomenon, that it's all been brought across the border from Mexico. Illegal immigrants have victimized young women, said Rogers. And then others offered a kind of protectionist rant.
What's that like to listen to? I mean, relentlessly. I mean, there were so many speeches like that, one after the other, some similar phrases again and again.
If one's going to be an honest reporter on this situation, you have to say that an American convention, especially a Republican one, is utterly fatiguing in a moral way. I mean, the morale goes sinking after one day, especially given that the tone has shifted from yesterday. Yesterday was all about unity, playing it down, not going on the attack. I mean, a memo had clearly gone round, you know, after last Saturday's shooting. And also, it has been said to me by some of the delegates that the part of the memo was the Democrats are doing quite badly. They're shooting themselves in the foot. Don't stop them. Don't interrupt. Just have a kind of sedate first day where it seems like we are stately and governing. That was yesterday's tone. Not so much today. Well, today they went a bit more Trumpian and traditional. I suppose I'm disturbed today by the extent to which so many of those speeches, nearly every single one to be honest, have an inherent delusion at the centre of them. They're not saying what they actually believe. They're making comments that they wish to be true, perhaps. When they talk about race, for example, they don't talk about the race problems in America that they'd like to challenge. They don't set up policy challenges for themselves. They just say, we've got it all right. We are not a racist party. Donald Trump's never been racist. Anybody who says that is part of the fake media. It's just relentlessly untrue and relentlessly, observably false. And after hours of that on repetition, you begin to feel kind of morally exhausted. They're in this kind of dime store rapture all the time, you know, a kind of Christian fake rapture where they're sort of so in touch with the truth. You can see it in their faces. It's shining out of them. They really believe this stuff. When in actual fact, they managed to have a whole day today talking about safety of Americans in America without talking about gun law once. Something that the man who's seeking the position could give evidence on behalf of, surely, after last Saturday.
There are people, delegates, walking around with, what was it, like little white bandages on their ears and, you know, homage to...
So ridiculous. You know, anything that Trump does, they'll just jump right. And I think that if he came in wearing kind of floppy ears and a Pluto mask, then by early afternoon, the whole of the congregation, and they do behave like a congregation, would be too.
One of the moments that really struck me was Jim Justice, the Senate candidate in West Virginia. He's the one who brought his dog.
Baby doll, the dog.
He promised that the country will become unhinged if Trump is not elected.
Bottom line to every single thing that's going on in this great country today is one thing. We become totally unhinged if Donald Trump is not elected in November.
Wasn't that amazing? You know, as if, you know, they weren't A, unhinged already, and what a thing to say.
Well, you know, the ambiguity, it's deliberate. You know, plausibly, he's just saying the country's going to be in disarray if Biden, you know, is horribly, you know, reelected. But actually, really, we all know what he's saying. It's that there's going to be another insurrection.
That's right. I mean, you point right to it. His dog's sitting there in a chair next to him. It's supposed to be all touchy-feely and cuddly, and here's my dog, and isn't it amusing? Actually, what the guy was doing was he was starting to do dog whistling about a future insurrection. Maybe the dog understood that whistle. That was its real purpose on stage. He was dog whistling away there, saying, yeah, if we don't get elected, we're not going to accept that result, and we're going to do what we did before. Again, This is what I mean about how exhausting it is to be in a room with people who are making threatening and quite wicked statements whilst pretending that it's all about togetherness, unity. It's full of threat. And today was, I'm afraid, classic Trumpian threat.
Don't ask for the American dream if you're not willing to obey the American laws and embrace the American culture.
There's various ways of surviving or not surviving this kind of experience. So I want to ask you, how are you doing on day two?
I refer you to our WhatsApp group today, in which I had to apologize for my rage texting during some of the speeches. So many of the speakers today were sort of would-be vice presidents. You know, we saw them prostrate themselves to Trump. DeSantis basically did the stump speech that he did when he was running against Trump, but had to, you know, just modify it very slightly to be a pro-Trump speech. But the later primetime speeches, what stood out for me was, well, first, the fact of Nikki Haley being there. I mean, up until very recently, I mean, the word was that she hadn't been invited. I mean, her whole campaign was basically saying a vote for Trump is akin to a vote for fascism. And yet, here she is.
There's a lot of people around this ticket who at one time or another called him a fascist or Hitler or, you know, including now his vice president.
Maybe I have Nikki Haley wrong, Andrew. Maybe she had a dark night of the soul 4 or 5 days ago, realized how much she really loved Donald J. Trump. But no, she knows if she wants to have a future in the Republican Party, this is what the donors require. The other thing I guess that was notable about her speech is she really went after Kamala Harris. I don't think we'd quite seen it so explicitly before. I mean, what she said was a vote for Biden, we all know, is really a vote for Harris, which seemed to be suggesting what? That Biden wouldn't finish his term or that Harris is really pulling the strings.
It's mortifying to watch an adult go back on their principles to that degree just through ambition. And that's what we're seeing with her. You know, this is an Elizabethan court where everybody advances themselves by how deeply they can genuflect before the king. It's embarrassing to watch. It's unrealistic. It feels like it's a dictatorship being sort of paraded before you. There's been no mention here of what you might call, you know, everyday social improvement. No talk about welfare, no talk about schools, no talk about hospitals, absolutely no talk about pensions or old age or an increasingly aging population and how we're going to deal with it. This is not an adult conversation. We're in day two. I've heard now double figures, well into possibly 50 or 60 speeches, all of a childish nature, really. Showing off, towing the line, and using these ridiculous mantras, but no real discussion of political matter.
But Andrew, what was it ever thus? I mean, this is my first convention, but you've been here before. I mean, 20 years ago, you wrote for the London Review of Books about your experience going to the Republican convention.
I was a child.
This is, you know, Madison Square Garden.
That's
2004.
Right. 2004. Well, that was a war convention. This feels like a war convention in 2024, but it's a homeland war. It's a war against invisible enemies, as we've discussed. You know, these, you know, phantom invasions across the border, these phantom enemies within, you know, Biden and his Democratic army sort of killing American values and killing American life. That's what this is about in 2024. But back 20 years ago, when I attended the Republican National Convention in New York, the country was at war. This was George W. Bush's high noon, in a way. He had to prove to the American people in 2004 that he was still the guy. But they were globalizers. So was Reagan. They saw America's role as being a very respectable and important one in policing the world. Of course, there's a tradition of that going right back through Johnson, even Kennedy, you know, a notion that America had a role in stopping the spread of communism, but also in influencing the values of the whole world. They were globalists. I don't think these guys that we heard today and yesterday and that we'll hear again tomorrow are in any sense globalists. They are parochial. They want to close the borders. They want to keep America first. And they want to sort of get out of Ukraine, get out of NATO. Trump wants nothing to do with spending US dollars improving the moral character or the political complexion of people in other places. This convention is like a church hall writ large. It's full of people with their eyes turned up to God who think America is the greatest place that ever existed. Why would you even think about anywhere else? Is that the sense you're getting as you look at it? I mean, it must be weird, you know, to hear somebody talk about a convention 20 years ago, which was just a kind of America that just doesn't really exist anymore.
I mean, I don't want to be falsely nostalgic. I mean, I remember that election, if not the convention. Bush, Cheney, I mean, it was pretty ugly against John Kerry.
It's always been ugly, and the accusations were terrible, and the undermining of people's service records and moral character was horrendous. But in some way, it wasn't so nihilistic. And by the way, I objected to it at the time. The piece I wrote 20 years ago is full of a kind of horror. It's a sort of Jeremiad against the idea of America policing the world in the way that it was and imagining that every country that wasn't America was a sort of dump and a sort of, you know, uncivilized quagmire. Weirdly, now you look back at that time and think, I don't say I feel nostalgic for it, but I think they were not like this.
Well, I mean, one of the things that stands out, of course, is just that it was in New York City. Then, of course, it was because, you know, 9/11, ground zero.
Yeah.
But, I mean, impossible now to imagine this Republican Party being in New York City. I mean, even though New York is, of course, Trump's town, so much of the tone in the party now is, I mean, New York is where the evil elites are, and they know that the protests there would be overwhelming.
So that's really the difference. I mean, back in 2004, for all the red meat being thrown at the audience and those fundamental, sometimes racist and self-interested things that were being said at the convention, they had an interest in NATO. They had an interest in their allies abroad. And what I'm hearing today is this tremendous sense in Trump's Republican era that they would turn their back on every single other nation on earth at this point.
And grievance than nobody in the world, not a nation, not a corporation, not a virus, not China, is going to defeat us. That is what American exceptionalism is all about. And that is what we will revive this November when we send Donald.
But of course, there are continuities. And some of those continuities I know have interested you.
Well, I mean, Rudolph Giuliani showed up today on the floor of the convention. It was very quickly turned into a meme because he was stumbling and at one point fell. But he was one of, you know, the keynote speakers at the convention, you know, you went to. He, a very different Giuliani. He was America's mayor then, and he, you know, was famous for having brought down the mob. I mean, I remember, I mean, one of my mother's kind of liberal friends gave her Giuliani's biography as a Christmas present. I mean, that was...
Heaven forfend.
That was actually still... I mean, I remember... returning it at Barnes & Noble, but it was something that, like, almost plausible for a Democrat to do 20 years ago. But something I hadn't realized until recently, I had to be reminded of it, was, you know, one of the things that made that election so ugly was the swift voting of John Kerry, which you write about. The country had already had 4 years of George W. Bush, and I think the Democrats, sort of similar to now, were trying to think, you know, not so much who do we love, who do we want to put in the Oval Office, you know, who we adore, but just who can we nominate, who can get at Bush. And the person they came up with was John Kerry. People didn't love John Kerry, but I think there's a sense that he was a correction. So, I mean, Democrats were so tired, you know, of having to, you know, defended Bill Clinton for not having served in Vietnam. And haha, John Kerry, he's a war hero. He has medals from his time in Vietnam. You know, we're going to put him up. It's going to be great. He's a bit boring, but he's really hard to attack. But no. And Andrew, reading your piece, I was reminded of something I'd completely forgotten if I ever knew, which was that the same Republican strategist who 20 years ago came up with the brilliant notion of let's destroy John Kerry's war record. Let's make up the story of how he was really a coward.
What's his name again?
Chris LaCivita.
That's him.
Whose name is now back he's one of the co-chairs of Trump's campaign now.
Amazing. So it was a real parade today, wasn't it, of potential, at one time potential vice presidential nominees, you know, and they're up in that prime spot. We had Ted Cruz with his terrible slogans. He introduced some new ones, despite all the repetitions of the day. He stopped Biden's border bloodbath, and they all held up their signs. I was actually right down on the convention floor for that, right up close to the podium. I could see the beads of sweat on his forehead.
How did we get here? It happened because Democrats cynically decided they wanted votes from illegals more than they wanted to protect our children.
Similarly, Marco Rubio, another vice presidential candidate for Trump, who spent quite a lot of time offering a tribute to the man who was shot last Saturday at the Trump rally where Trump suffered a grazed ear. And they're clearly already tooling up this assassination attempt on Trump as part of a whole concatenation of assaults on Trump. They include all the legal challenges he's had, the attacks from the media. It's all strung together now, and they say this is the persecution of Donald Trump and these vice presidential candidates. Although I don't suppose they have to anymore. They're still behaving as chief defenders of this man, except they've added in now an assassination attempt to the long line of insults he's suffered.
I mean, one of the, I think, the few speeches to, you know, explicitly refer to Trump's convictions, it was Laura Trump. You know, she gave it in a litany of, as you say, you know, the impeachments. I think she said the unfair convictions, now the shooting, and look how tough he is.
As he was jostled off stage by Secret Service, that he knew how defining that moment would be for our country. And he hoisted his fist in the air.
Without once actually dealing with the huge Republican-sized elephant in the room, which is the fact that not only is this presidential candidate the only president in American history ever to actually have been convicted, but he's got convictions ahead, potentially. I mean, he's got charges against him. And it's unbelievable that these people should be standing before us talking endlessly, bleatingly, and in large terms about law and order in this country.
Andrew, this is only day two. Two more days to go. Tomorrow is Make America Strong Once Again. So maybe this will build you up. We'll have J.D. Vance. Everything leading to the man himself.
I cannot wait.
I think I'm sending you to bed.
It's the right thing to do.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Are you ready for some hoops off?
Are you ready for some hoops off?
This is legitimately what you see people do right before they're going to fight. They take off their hoops, their earrings, because they don't want to get them ripped out of their ear.
Mm-mm.
And they get ready for battle. Hey, I'm Liz.
And I'm Karen.
And you're listening to Hoops Off from Luminary.
On this show, we take our hoops off to bring you the spiciest, the saltiest takes on each week's games. We'll also be reading books by our favorite players, reviewing Shaq-sponsored products.
And of course, we'll be bringing the tea.
Should I prepare the hot water?
Oh, you better prepare the hot water. Please make sure to follow the show on your favorite podcast listening platform.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.